I believe that we all have the copy of the agenda for this meeting. And if there's anyone who does not have, could you please indicate by show of hands so that we can give you one? So we all have. Under opening, I'd like us to bow our heads and observe a moment of silence for prayer or meditation. Good morning, honourable members, and good morning to ESCOM board led by Ms. Nelly Magubane. Good morning to the ESCOM executive team. Did I have it here? Yes. Good morning to the staff and all guests. On the 23rd of June 2015, this committee approved the ESCOM Subordinated Loan Special Appropriation Amendment Bill and the ESCOM Special Appropriations Bill. This consisted of a $23 billion equity injection aimed at driving delivery of planned maintenance, capital expenditure and cost savings. In addition, the conversion to equity of the 60 billion rand subordinated added to ESCOM's equity and reduced the company's debt burden. The committee indicated that it will be monitoring the implementation of ESCOM's long-term strategy very closely, as Parliament has to ensure that SOEs spend taxpayers' money properly and with proper regard to value for money. It's about the taxpayers' money, not our money. Well, to recap, the committee recommended that ESCOM ensures that its procurement systems are efficient, effective, and transparent so as to ensure value for money and the attainment of enterprise targets, that all governance structures are functioning and properly capacitated, that ESCOM prioritizes and embed skills transfer in its build infrastructure program, that ESCOM has in place a strategic divided policy in place which takes into account the growth and development objectives of the country and other recommendations. So these were the recommendations at the time. Since 2015. The committee does welcome the recent appointment of an experienced, qualified and credible leadership to the board of ESCOM. ESCOM is critical to the South African economy. As a key enabler of economic growth and social transformation, ESCOM's financial and operational conditions need to be continuously strengthened. We wish to assure South Africans that we are on track with our NDP objectives and also that the turnaround of ESCOM is on track. Therefore, I would like to once more welcome you to this meeting and invite all of you to engage meaningfully and in a constructive way so that we achieve the objective of this meeting. Thank you very much. I will then move on to item number two, which is apologies. Are there any apologies? I have received an apology from Mr. Gwabaza, who here is attending to some unforeseen circumstances. If we finish early, he will not join us. But if we finish early, he will not join us. But if he finishes early, he will join us. Okay. Any other apology?
Morning, Chairperson, honorable members and guests. We received another apology from Ms. Manana. She's not feeling well. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Honorable members, do you accept the apologies? Apologies accepted. Thank you very much. We will then move on to item number three, which is presentation by ESCOM. But maybe before that, it will be appropriate that we introduce ourselves. Starting from me, I am Bingi Posa. I'm the chairperson of the Standing Committee on Appropriations. Honorable Shope Sole. Okay.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Doreen Senobanyana. I'm a member of this committee.
Thank you.
Morning, everybody. My name is Alan McLaughlin. I'm a member of the committee.
Thank you very much. And then,
thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning to the ESCOM delegation. My name is Tepo Masu. I'm the advisor to the committee. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm known for the class of the committee assistant.
Okay.
Darren Arons, committee secretary.
Thank you. I would like us to finish this side, and then we cross over. If you can introduce yourself, ma'am.
In the info business day.
Thank you. You are welcome.
Lamise Omerji from FIN 24.
You're welcome.
Lindsay Denklinger, Eyewitness News.
You're welcome.
Francois Williams, Network Freedom Donor.
Welcome.
Morning, Felicia Lombard. I'm the media officer for the committee.
Thank you. You're welcome. Shall we then cross over this side and over to you, ma'am?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My name is Nelisiwa Makubani, and I'm a non-executive director of ESCOM.
Thank you.
Good morning, honorable chair and honorable members. My name is Ayanda Noah. I'm the group executive for customer services at ESCOM, and currently I'm standing in for the interim group CEO.
Good morning, honorable chairman, honorable members. My name is Martin Weiss, and I'm general manager responsible for financial reporting in ESCOM.
Thank you.
Good morning, honorable chair and honorable members. My name is William Majola, acting group executive for transmission at ESCOM.
Thank you.
Good morning, honorable chair and members. My name is Moniti Nkhabu, an executive responsible for assurance and forensic in ESCOM.
Thanks.
Morning, honorable chair and honorable members, ESCOM executives and other guests. My name is Donald Ngaliming. I'm the chief director, Department of Public Enterprises.
Okay.
Good morning, chair and members, honorable members. My name is Mapelo Mbunelwa, manager of parliamentary affairs, ESCOM.
I did not hear the last part.
Mapelo Mbunelwa, parliamentary affairs manager at ESCOM.
Very much. Yourself,
sir. Okay. Good morning. My name is Zabulo Ndlovu, Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Okay. Thank you. Now that we know who is here, I'm going to invite you to feel free. And then let's make this meeting our meeting, and let's see, you know, if you can just be constructive in our engagement, making sure that we achieve for the objective of this meeting. We'd like to hear about the progress made and but also future plans to
to make sure that you get out of the situation in which you are. Thank you. Honourable Member McLaughlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't hear any apologies from the Eskom delegation, and I noticed that the CEO is not here. It's customary for the CEO to attend these meetings. Can we hear why that is the case, please?
Okay. Let me check. Darren, didn't you receive any apology from the CEO and the chairperson of the board?
We received apologies on behalf of the CEO and the CFO. Both of them are abroad on official business. I haven't received an apology from the chairperson of the board.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was going to make an apology as I make a presentation. My apologies for not doing that. Basically, the chairperson, the CFO, and the interim group CEO, they are actually abroad at the moment. They're in Washington as we speak. They're engaging the investors and also the lenders on the issues of Eskom, because most of the lenders want to find out how are we going to get out of this mess.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Do you accept the apologies? Okay. Apologies accepted. Thank you. We will then invite the acting chair, the leader of the delegation, to lead us in their presentation.
Thanks again, Chairperson, and we really appreciate the opportunity to make this presentation, and we also appreciate the invitation today. Honourable Member of the Standing Committee on Appropriations and Eskom Executives and Managers, media and all those present, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah. Okay, on behalf of the Board of Eskom, I would like to thank this committee again for this opportunity to update you on the progress and also and looking forward to the support of other endeavors that we intend to take in order to put this prestigious organization back in its financial track. And as Honourable Members and Chairperson are aware, the Eskom Board of Directors that was appointed in January 2018 has been well received by both the public and the investor community and was seen as a step in the right direction for Eskom's operational and financial stability. Last Friday marked 90 days since this board appointment. Significant progress has been made since then, and the last time we presented to this committee in September last year. When we were appointed to the Eskom board, it was apparent that there were two major issues we had to deal with, which is liquidity issues, and also we needed to make sure that we intend to improve corporate governance. Today, I would like to share with you what we have achieved to date. Ladies and gentlemen, to ensure continued leadership stability at Eskom, the board is happy to report that we are in the final stages of concluding the appointment of a group chief executive and group chief financial officer. We expect to have a permanent group chief executive by the end of this month and to complete the recruitment process for a chief financial officer in May 2018. The board continues to focus on corporate governance improvements. Along with the emphasis on ensuring Eskom's short-term stability, the finalization of investigations into suspended executives remains a key priority for the board. The prioritization of this process of restoration has since led to the departure of five senior executives or senior management, including executives, on the face of serious allegations of misconduct. A further four executives remain on suspension, three of which will be facing independent disciplinary hearing in May 2018. Of the four, one executive was found to be not guilty against the charges leveled against him and will be returning to work shortly. The board is satisfied that due and thorough process is followed across all disciplinary issues. As a board, we believe that the action taken against those who were key in some of the critical governance lapses within our first 90 days in office demonstrate the seriousness with which we take our mandate of rooting out irregular practices. We view this as only the first step in combating corruption, but is no means the end of the story, as we will continue to pursue wrongdoing and take corrective actions within the South African legal framework. These steps will also go a long way to reducing the reportable irregularities as reported on by the external auditors during the 2016-17 financial year and audit, as well as the interim audit for 2017-18. The organization is determined to clear the company of corruption in all its forms and is currently investigating 239 cases reported through the organization's whistleblowing channels. These actions are part of a collective effort to further improve trust and restore investor confidence to enable the organization to access financial markets and re-establish its credibility. By the end of March 2018, we had completed 75 of the 239 investigations, of which 39 are undergoing disciplinary processes. We are in the process of commencing mandatory lifestyle audits of all employees, two levels below the group chief executive. We have furthermore instructed that no ESCOM official be allowed to do business with ESCOM while being an employee of the ESCOM group. Through an audit process, 24 employees were identified as having business interests in suppliers doing business with ESCOM. Remedial actions have commenced, and sanctions of only 3 remain outstanding. In addition to our continued focus on corporate governance, the board is also working on a new business strategy that will ensure that ESCOM remains sustainable. We anticipate completion of the process by end of September 2018 and will value an opportunity to share the salient features of that strategy with this committee. As of 31 March 2018, marked the end of our 2017-18 financial year, we will finalize the integrated results by July 2018, being mindful that the external auditing process is critical before these results can be released. As you are aware, there have been many developments since the release of the 2016-17 results in July 2017. However, as per the requirement of this committee, our focus today will be on the audited 2016-17 financial year-end results. As shared with this committee in September 2017, ESCOM received a qualified audit for the financial year-end 31st March 2017, as the auditors could not rely on the processes in place to ensure the completeness of irregular expenditure reporting. ESCOM established and implemented an audit qualification turnaround program to ensure we have adequate systems and processes in place to monitor and report all irregular expenditure and take the necessary corrective actions to address the audit qualification. The ESCOM Board Audit and Risk Committee oversees the progress of the recovery plan. To date, we have reviewed 97% contracts over R1 billion and 91% of contracts under R1 billion to ensure compliance to various internal policies and procedures and procurement and other relevant legislation. The plan is on track to address the completeness and also address the weaknesses. While irregular expenditure can be expected to increase, we expect a better audit report than 2017. On appointment as the ESCOM board, we were faced with a number of financial challenges for the 2017-18 financial year. These included a flat revenue attributable to a lower price increase from NERSA and a declining sales volume. This was further exacerbated by escalating long outstanding municipal arrear debt. ESCOM is actively working to mitigate the increase in municipal debt and recover overdue debt. This challenge has reached an acceptable high level, which require collective efforts to resolve. It is a matter that is no longer ESCOM's problem alone. While we have continued with the PAJA process to disconnect non-paying municipalities and have disrupted electricity supply, sometimes up to 6 hours to non-paying municipalities, this alone is not a sustainable solution. We therefore urge this committee to assist us in dealing with this challenge, because some of these challenges are basically underlined by the dysfunctionality of some of those municipalities. The 2016-17 audit qualification on irregular expenditure has had a negative impact on access to funding, hence the board's focus on the resolution of governance and liquidity concerns is a priority. We will, however, share the detailed performance for the 2017-18 financial year after the finalization of the results later this year. The capital build program is on track. The final units at Medupi and Gusile will achieve commercial operations by financial year of 2021 and financial year of 2023, respectively, barring any delays in contractor performance, industrial actions, or technical issues. You may have read some media reports that spoke about a constrained system, even asking questions about the possibility of load shedding this coming winter. We'd like to state that the electricity grid is stable and we've done the bulk of maintenance, which is traditionally done in summer in preparation for winter when demand is higher. The system has been constrained, but stable from the latter part of 2017 and the first quarter of 2018, which has necessitated us running open cycle gas turbines in order to meet the demand. However, this is still within our budget. We have experienced an increase of breakdowns and generating units that are out on unplanned maintenance. Those units requiring long periods to repair and units on planned maintenance returning later than the original planned date exacerbated the situation. It is important to note that we run open cycle gas turbines when it is necessary. We have a target to achieve a planned availability of 80%, with 10% of units on planned maintenance and 10% on unplanned maintenance. We have plans in place to manage our primary energy resources to ensure that we reach healthy stockpiles across all our power stations. We will share a detailed picture of the electricity system at a press briefing that is planned for the 3rd of May 2018. The organization is currently facing imbalances whereby several coal-fired power stations, particularly those in the Mpumalanga province, are affected. The prevailing situation at 7 stations, which are Arnott, Tutuga, Majuba, Hendrina, Camden, Creel, and Komati power stations, are stations where coal stocks levels are below the required target of 20 days as stipulated in the grid code. Although the total current stock day levels of 35 days, excluding Medupi and Gusile power stations, are within acceptable range, it is necessary to have all stations at the required stock day levels. A number of factors, including the historical underinvestment at Cost Plus Mines are the mines where ESCOM invests in those mines in order to ensure availability of coal as and when required. Due to capital constraints and the undersupply on both coal quality and quantity by the Tegeta mines, which are under business rescue, have negatively affected stock levels and production. ESCOM has informed NERSA of the current coal supply challenges and planned remedial actions as per regulatory requirement. The recovery plan for coal includes securing additional coal supplies for the affected stations, and a further redirection of coal stocks is underway to address the imbalances. The situation cannot be compared to 2008, when we experienced load shedding. During this period, coal production and deliveries were severely affected with wet coal due to abnormal rainfall being at the center of the various challenges experienced at the time. On top of these challenges, there was an increase in demand for electricity, which resulted in coal stockpile level being significantly lower than the targeted level. In the first week of January 2008, the number of stockpile days was at an all-time low of average of 12 days, and it improved to 24 days in July 2008. Currently, Eskom's overall stockpile level is at 35 days, excluding Medupi and Kusile. Furthermore, the additional capacity from our new built power stations has increased capacity, further enabling us to keep the lights on. At this point, Chairperson, please allow me to again introduce the team that is going to be making the presentation. Ms. Ayanda Noah, the Acting Group Chief Executive, who will provide you with an update on the progress on the performance against government support package as invited by this committee. As I've already indicated, Mr. Phakamani Hadebe, the Interim Group Chief Executive, and Mr. Khalid Kasim, the Acting CFO, are unable to attend here today because they are on international roadshow together with the chairperson. Supporting Ms. Noah today will be Mr. Willie Majola, Acting Group Executive for Transmission, Mr. Mulifo Khabu, Senior General Manager, Assurance and Forensics, and, of course, Mr. Martin Bays, General Manager, Finance. Chairperson, once again, I thank you and the honorable members for affording us the time to make this presentation today. Before I conclude, Chairperson, allow me to reiterate that while we have a difficult period ahead, notable strides have been made in addressing key challenges for facing this organization. We are plugging further bleeding in the company's finances by driving efficiency cost to revenue ratios and an appropriate earnings before interest, taxation, and depreciation and amortization to ensure sustainability. We raised about 43 billion in funding during the 2018-19 financial year, providing sufficient liquidity to allow the organization time to recommence with its normal funding program required to execute the financial year of a 18-19 funding plan, although the journey is a long one. We've doubled our efforts in managing governance irregularities. Eskom continues to fast-track the build program. The RCA public hearings, which is a regulatory clearing account, commenced last week Monday and are part of the NERSA process. We are making strides in finalizing our long-term strategy that will move Eskom forward towards achieving economic and financial responsibility. Rooting out financial mismanagement, malfeasance, and maladministrations, and entrenching financial and business discipline in order to rebuild investor confidence in Eskom remains our non-negotiable mandate as a board. Thank you very much, Chairperson. With your permission, I would like now to hand over to Ayanda Noah.
Thank you.
So,
Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, again, good morning and thank you very much for the opportunity for us to present today. And our focus is really going to be on performance, Eskom's financial performance, and also talking about the performance against the government support package that was given to Eskom. Let me start by just emphasising that the liquidity of the company and also its status as a going concern are still of a serious concern both to the board and also to the executive of Eskom. During this financial year, we picked up that a number of stakeholders are really worried about a number of issues, primarily the governance lapses in the company and also the concern about the liquidity of the company. So the new board and the interim group executive, group chief executive, are actually faced with those particular
challenges that they need to deal with as a matter of priority. So if I just reflect on the start of the interim group chief executive and the acting CFO, together with the board, they actually spent the first couple of days, in fact, interacting with the bankers, with the lenders, with the investors, and really just try to find ways of closing our short-term liquidity issues. One of the things that was really highlighted by the financiers was, in terms of the governance in the company, what are you going to do? What are you doing about it? And are we really having focused consequence management in terms of the issues that have been raised? I think that was quite a big issue. In fact, in speaking to a number of bankers, the bankers would say, we do have the money, we are willing to support you, but we are really challenged with your governance lapses. We are also challenged with the fact that there is no visible consequence management in terms of the transgressions that have been identified. However, what is positive to report is that they did manage to raise 25 billion rand from the investors, and of course with a commitment that there are going to be rectification of the governance issues that were raised, and also looking at management stability and more especially the consequence management. If you then move to the performance of the organization, you will see that in the last financial year and this current financial year ending March 2018, the results indicate that they have weakened somewhat. If you look at the deterioration in our financial performance in the last financial year, if this financial year as well is currently being audited, as the board member has already indicated, we are aiming to release the results. I think it will be towards middle or end of July this year, once the audit process has been completed. Now, some of the issues that were raised in the last financial year, you are aware that we had an audit qualification. We also have constraints in terms of accessing funding in the market. And as I've already said, the issues around governance. All of these things have obviously negatively impacted on the 2017-18 financial results, which we are going to be announcing in July, as I've already mentioned. You will see in the main presentation that our financial ratios have deteriorated. If you look at our gearing at the moment, it's very high, it's over 70%. Our cash interest cover has also deteriorated, and we are low in terms of profitability. One of the impacting factors or contributing factors has been the 2.2% tariff that was allowed to Eskom. And of course, you are aware that our sales volumes have declined, resulting into lower revenues that we have gained as a company. The auditors have raised concerns regarding our going concern status, and they are also concerned about the levels of tariff increases that we are receiving. As I've already mentioned, in 2018 we received 2.2% increase, and then for the financial year ending in March 2019, only 5.3%, which is this current year starting. Coming to the annual financial status qualification issues and progress thereof, very, very good progress has been made in terms of dealing with the issues, the Note 52 issues that were raised. To address those issues, what we have done is to put together a team that is dedicated to addressing all the issues that were identified. We meet with those teams as oversight from an Exco point of view. We meet with them on a weekly basis just to look at what is the progress that has been made. We have made sure that the legislative compliance on all contracts is assessed. The monitoring and compliance controls and reporting systems are also addressed. They are in place. And at this point, perhaps allow me to also share the governance structures that we have in Eskom in terms of how, from a board point of view, they provide oversight to the business. So we have the board. And then under the board, we also have the functioning board subcommittees. So we've got the Audit and Risk Committee, we've got Social, Environmental and Sustainability Committee, we've got the People and Governance Committee, the Investment Committee, and also the Tender Committee. We also, just to supplement and strengthen on our board, on our governance issues, we've got an ethics policy which has recently been updated. We emphasize that annually all employees must complete their declaration of interest, which is done electronically on the system. We also have a whistleblowing policy which allows any employee who would like to indicate any issues of concern through an anonymous process. And then on the EXCO side, we also have strategic committees. We've got the People Committee, we've got an Operations Committee which looks at the operations of the business. We've got the Regulation, Policy and Environment Committee. We've got the Finance Committee, and just recently we've also established a Customer Council, which is a new committee that is going to be looking at how we can strengthen the voice of the customer in terms of us listening to the customer better, engaging with the stakeholders better, so that we've got a better understanding of what the critical issues are. And then lastly, also in terms of providing assurance that we are concentrating on the contribution to improve our financial liquidity, we also have a committee that looks on a weekly basis on the financial performance of the company, in particular on the cost containment measures that we have put together. This committee is called a Design to Cost Committee. We meet on a weekly basis. We've put in a structure, a program management office, which actually monitors the performance and reports to this committee to see what the progress is, so that corrective actions can be taken. The other side is looking at how we can increase and improve on our revenue cycle. And we've got a committee, which I chair. We call it the Growth Steering Committee. Basically, it's really looking at how we can stimulate local demand sales, and also to look at how we can increase our cross-border sales, and also looking at non-regulated revenues, which we do through our subsidiary company, Eskom Rotech Industries. So we are looking at a number of initiatives to make sure that we address the liquidity issues of the company, looking at both the cost and also looking at the income to see what can be done better. The other request from the committee was really for us to talk about how we can, how we have performed on the business productivity program, details of which are in the presentation, in the detailed presentation. But this is a program, Madam Chair, which was really designed to make sure that we address the MYPD3 revenue shortfall. We had a number of initiatives in that program, and then over a period of 5 years, we did manage to achieve savings in excess of 60 billion. In terms of the government, the guarantee framework agreement, it has been extended from the 31st of March 2017 to the 31st of March 2023. And to date, we have 78% of the government guarantees that have been committed, 17% still under negotiation, and 5% remains unallocated for future funding. Ms. Makubane has already talked to the build program in terms of the progress and the fact that we'll be completing both Medupi and Gusile in 2021 and financial year 2023. But recently we also synchronized or connected to the grid two units, one from Gusile and one from Medupi. Madam Chair and Honorable Members, I do need to point out that in terms of the support, the government support, we had actually anticipated that our electricity price would be 102 cents by financial year 2018. Unfortunately, in terms of the NERSA decision, we only reached 89% in 2018, and in financial year 2019, it only goes to about My document is tired of me. I think it's a message to say I probably need to speed up. So it's 94 cents in 2019. The other point I also wanted to just highlight is that currently you are aware that we are undergoing or attending the public hearings on the RCA, which Ms. Makubane also alluded to. We have interfaced with a number of stakeholders. In fact, we are participants. We share our share my technologies losing me here. We do share our position and what our requirement in terms of the of this revenue clearing account. And basically what it is it's a reconciliation instrument where we look back and say, this is what we applied for in terms of the a number of assumptions that were made, and this is what we actually realized. And the difference can actually be either up or down. And unfortunately in this case, what has actually transpired is that we have a shortfall or a recovery of 66 billion that is being applied for. It covers 3 years. It covers financial year 14-15, 15-16, and 16-17. And you may have heard in the media that it is translated into about 30%. From an ESCOM point of view, we have said that to make sure that we take into account the impact on the consumers, we are quite prepared to liquidate this over a period of time. And obviously, in terms of this, the NERSA would have to look at our application, listen to the stakeholders, and then they apply their minds in terms of whether the costs that you are applying for were efficiently and prudently incurred, and then make their determination, which determination then translates into a tariff adjustment. So we are going through that process, Madam Chair, and I believe it's going to be completed around about the 11th of May or thereabouts, in which after which we will then await the decision of the NERSA. Again, Chair, I've already touched on the fact that in terms of our financial performance, we do have some difficulties, but I am pleased to say that on the operational side, our operations are performing very well. We have, together with the board, looked at putting together a comprehensive long-term strategy and plan, and indications are that by September we will be in, we will have a new strategy in place, which will then be shared with the public in due course. We also believe that by the announcement of the financials in July, we should be able to share with you some key or salient points on this strategy. The municipal debt really remains a very a difficult, a challenging area for the company. As we speak, the amount of the arrear debt at the end of March 2018 is about 13.5 billion. I'm not going to spend too much time on the elaborating on the initiatives which Ms. Makubane has already mentioned. Madam Chair, there are other issues that I just want to bring to the attention of the committee before I conclude. I think about two Fridays back, there was a media release that related to an EOH company, an IT company, where it was alleged that there was some corruption around the awarding or the about to award the EOH contract. The whistleblowing actually happened externally, and it wasn't through our own internal processes. But needless to say that immediately it was brought to the executive's attention, it was dealt with, and currently it is being investigated and will be dealt with accordingly. The second point I wanted to touch on, which we have already released a media report on, I think also again Ms. Magubane has already alluded to it, is the issue of possibility of load shedding in winter as a result of coal shortages. We have issued a media statement, which we did yesterday, which I trust that you have an opportunity to see. If not, we will be able to circulate it to the committee to see. The plans are in place to deal with the situation. We have approached National Treasury where it is appropriate. We have engaged or invoked our internal governance processes to make sure that we procure the coal, and we should be in comfortable position in winter this year. The details of the system status are going to be shared again next week. And then, Chair, I think there was also another point I just wanted to raise, which is the McKinsey contract. You are aware that we are in the recovery process for the monies that are due to Eskom, the $1.6 billion. The process is in far advanced stages, and we have initiated the collection process where the letter of demand has been sent through, and we await a court date where we can then look at the deliberations. I want to, just in handing over to Martin, also just emphasize that the financial situation of the company really needs a lot of focus. We do have challenges around governance, as I've already said, and also reputational issues and challenges that have surfaced in the last couple of years. So at this point, Madam Chair, if you'd allow me, I would like to hand over to Martin just to take us through the details of the presentation. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Over to you, Martin. Thank you, Honourable Chairman, Honourable Members and the media. What I will share with you now is I'll give you an overview of where we started and then also the progress that we've made since then. We started off with Eskom that we really experienced some several challenges in the business. We picked up that there's a slowing demand growth, and what we actually find is it's actually a flattening out of the demand. In the generation side, we picked up that some of the plant performances started deteriorating. Also taking into account that the average age of the fleet is around about 37 years old. The new build, we've seen that there were some cost increases in the new build, and we also saw that the coal cost started rising quite above the industry norm. The average coal cost increase was in the order of 19%, while the industry norm was between 10 and 12%. We see the manpower cost also growing, mostly driven by the volumes, as we started building new power stations and we started putting the three old stations into commercial operation, we start seeing an increase in the manpower cost. And all of that has resulted in the balance sheet and being under pressure. Also, the fact that Eskom was downgraded by the rating agencies made it more difficult to get funding, but also the funding comes at a cost. And then there's also a lot of regulatory uncertainty and the price path itself. So what then happened is that the government has agreed to provide some support to Eskom. First of all, there was government guarantees, $350 billion, and it has recently been extended for 5 years. It was extended in March 2017. And the purpose of this is that Eskom can go and borrow the money, providing guarantees to the lenders. There was the loan conversion, the 60 billion rand loan conversion. Remember that the government made money available on a subordinated loan to Eskom, and the value of the loan was 60 billion. That was then converted to equity in the form of shares, and equity injection of 23 billion rand was provided to Eskom, and that was also converted into shares. So the total issue of shares was 83 billion shares, which were issued during the 2016 financial year. What we then did is we implemented what we call the design to cost strategy, and the strategy was intended to deliver the following. First of all, additional capacity of 8.6 gigawatts through the new build program, and it's mainly Medupi and Kusile stations. We wanted to see an improvement in the energy availability factor that measures the performance of the generation plant. 1 million new connections over a 5-year period, that meant that we had to connect about 200,000 houses per annum. And then also that the planned maintenance of Eskom must be around 10% in the generation fleet. Then on the transmission side, ramping up of the N-1 projects so that we can comply with regulation, and also reduction in particulate emissions from the generation fleet because of the coal that we use. And then also to connect additional IPPs, and in total that they will produce in the order of 7.4 terawatt hours. And then also that we will build some additional transmission lines and strengthen the transmission network. You can see there a total of 2,390 kilometers. Now that strategy was based on the following three assumptions, and it will achieve the following outcomes. First of all, it was based on the price path of an order of between 13% to 19% over the period. And that would result in an improvement in profitability, specifically if we look at EBITDA, that we can see the evolution of the EBITDA there growing with about 27% over the period. And then also that Eskom can achieve investment grade, standalone investment grade towards the end of the period. And on the right-hand side, I just showed you three measurements in terms of the investment grade. And it was based on the following assumptions, that we will add the additional capacity of the 8.6 gigawatts in Eskom, and then also the capacity of the IPPs. And then also that we will invest another 26 billion rand towards environmental compliance. And then on the additional, on the external spend, we will spend 80 billion to support supply development and localization. And then also on the customer connections, as I said, we will connect 1 billion customers over a 5-year period. This picture here just shows you the impact of the regulatory decisions. If you look at the block sort of in the blue color, it showed you what the decision was by the regulator. It was a 5-year period of 8%, which brings you to 89.13 cents by the end of 2018. The block in green was what has actually happened. And you can see in FY 2016 that we received 12.69%. And that was as a clawback of the RCA process. And then in FY 2017, it was 9.4%, also as part of the RCA process. And then in FY 2018, we only received 2.2%, which brings us back exactly to the 89.13%. The intention of the government support package is the one in red that shows you there that it was 2 years of 8 and thereafter 13%, which would have meant that we end up with a price of 102.08 rand per kilowatt hour. And if we take the 5.23% into account that we received from the 1st of April of 2018, it will bring you back to about 94 cents per kilowatt hour, still below the number where we should have been a year ago. In terms of the business productivity program, that was one of the initiatives that we implemented in Eskom, where we're going to go make some savings in terms of the agreement with government. And what we did is we had a team looking at several options in terms of savings, from cost savings, from cutting flights, from looking at maintenance and getting additional revenue in. And you can see in 2014 it started off very slowly. The blue is the target, and the brown bar shows you what actually happened. In 2015, we were still under, and then in 2016, we started picking up a lot of momentum, and same with 17 and same with 18, and if you look over the 5-year period, we actually exceeded our target in terms of the savings. This is just to show you an improvement in the financial performance. So what I do here if I look at the 2015 financial year and I compare that to the 2016 financial year, you can see that the revenue was up with just over 10%. EBITDA, which is the earnings before interest, tax, depreciation and amortization, it's actually a measure of how good your operating part of the business is doing. That is before the depreciation and the interest costs. You can see there that it improved with 37% to 32 billion. The net profit went up from 0.2 billion to 4.6 billion. And we achieved the PBP savings of 17.5 versus a target of 13.4. You look on the right hand side, that tells you the key financial ratios, what happened to them. First of all, we can see there the interest cover ratio, and it's a cash interest cover ratio. It went from 0.27 to 0.55. And the debt service cover ratio went from 0.92 to 1.07. I must just say that any debt service cover ratio under 1 is not good. The debt equity, it was 2.53, and what happened, it went to 1.67. And the big reason for the increase in the debt equity was the conversion of the subordinated loan and the 23 billion equity injected into Eskom. The gross debt to EBITDA ratio also went up. And the EBITDA itself, it improved through increased revenue and also cost containment. And then also the liquidity position improved because of the 23 billion. And the cash from operations activities of 37.2 billion. The previous financial year, it was 27.3 billion. If I can then move on and I show you now the 2016 year versus the 2017 financial year, and again, very similarly, revenue went up with 8%, the EBITDA improved further with 14% to 38 billion, cash from operations went up to 46 billion, and non-primary energy costs reduced with 5.6 billion rand. Big reason for the reduction in the primary energy cost is that we started using less and less of the open cycle gas turbine. And you can see on the left-hand side the profitability, what happened with profitability over that period. On the right-hand side, all the key financial ratios, cash interest cover went up, slightly down, but it was in line with the previous financial year. Debt service cover ratio improved. FFO as a percentage of gross debt improved. And gross debt divided by EBITDA ratio also improved. And you can see the solvency, which is your debt equity ratio or your gearing. And you can see in 2015 how high it went, and then you see the immediate reduction in 2016, which was the 23 billion rand equity injection into the business by the government. And then in 2017, it started increasing again. And when you look at the generation performance, you could see that if I look at the graph on the right-hand side, but if I start looking at the bottom graph, you can see there in the last 3 months of that graph, you can see there was a substantial increase in the availability factor in the generation fleet. If I go to the top graph, you will see that it improved from 71% where it was in 2015-16 to over 77% in 2016-17. And then the unplanned breakdown also reduced. It was 14.9% and it reduced actually to 9.9%. And we reduced the reliance on the OCGTs. In the last financial year, we spent only 340 million rand on the OCGTs. I must say in this financial year, we will most probably spend even less on the OCGTs, the financial year that has just finished. That is just a picture that shows you how we added more capacity to the grid. And we can look there at March 2016, we can see we added 794 megawatts, which was basically a Medupi unit. And then also in March 2017, we added 1,332, which was also basically Ingula that we brought online. For this financial year that has just gone past, we have added some more units, specifically Medupi and the first unit of Kusile. And as Ayanda said, that we managed to synchronize another unit in Medupi, and we also synchronized another unit in Kusile, That happened in March, so we expect within the next 6 to 9 months we will actually be able to put those two units also in commercial operation. The transmission line, we're well on track to achieve our target, and also the substations on the transmission side, we are definitely on track to meet our target on that. That means that we keep on strengthening the transmission network. Now, if I look at the current performance, we can see that March 2017 results was very good. And what we've done is we've released our interim results for 2018. Our results for March 2018 will only be available around in July. We're targeting to have our AGM in the early part of July. The audit is busy taking place as we speak. And the environment which we're operating has changed significantly since March 27. And as we said, the audit qualification on the irregular expenditure and then also funding became restricted and had an impact on liquidity and also the governance issues that have already been raised. Now, post-2017, we saw that there was the liquidity issue, but we have actually achieved acceptable operational performance, the appointment of the new board, which we spoke about already, and the focus remains on driving a focused turnaround strategy and then also ensuring Eskom sustainability in the long run. And the board has embarked on a revised business strategy, and they have indicated that towards the second half of this calendar year, around about September, October, we will be able to implement the new strategy. Generation plant performance improved with the availability of 83.2% in September 2016. This is now comparing September 2016 to September 2017, so it's a 6 month period, 78.4. You do expect that in the first 6 months of the year that your availability factor will be higher than in the second 6 months of the year, purely because in the second 6 months of the year you do a lot of your maintenance. First 6 months of the year cover the winter, and in the winter period we do limited maintenance. The transmission was performing very well. The system minutes lost, it's 1.04 system minutes lost. There was no major incident, and similarly the distribution network is also performing very well. In the first 6 months of the year we've actually electrified 100,000 households, and the latest figures indicate that we will achieve our 200,000 households for the financial year. Kusile Unit 1 and Medupi Unit 5 achieved commercial operation, adding installed capacity of 1594 megawatts, and 350 kilometers of transmission lines was constructed and 1,000 MVA transformer capacity commissioned. From the environmental side, we've achieved some improved performance, and on the water usage as well, that we really did a lot of work around the water consumption, that we can actually minimize the use of water. Also on the injury side, the lost time injuries safety, we improved to a rate of 0.23, coming from 0.28 the previous 6 months. Regrettably, we suffered 2 employee fatalities and 5 contractor fatalities. We can see there the triple VEE, attributable spend of 71.2%, is also up from 65% the previous 6 months, and also spend with black-owned suppliers of 38.9%, also up from 30.2%. And also on the employment of female employees in senior management positions, we've made some strides in improving that as well, from 28% to just under 37%. We spoke about the audit qualification, and they've also included what they call an emphasis of matter regarding Eskom's going concern position. Now, what an emphasis of matter really says to you is that the auditors are concerned around the going concern position of Eskom, and they just want to make sure that the readers of the financial statements are aware of the issue. So they did not qualify based on the going concern basis, but they did say that they are concerned around the going concern. The EBITDA was slightly down. September 2016 was 32, and in September of 2017, the 6 months, it was 30 billion. And the big reason for that is because you only received 2.2% tariff increase, and while your cost is going up with more than 2.2%. The net profit after tax also reduced from the 10 billion to 6 billion. And what you start picking up is as your new units come on stream, you have to start depreciating these units. And also in terms of accounting rules, you are allowed to capitalize finance costs as you construct the power stations. But the moment they are put in commercial operation, you stop capitalizing the finance cost and then you start picking it up as an income cost in your income statements. The net cash from operations was 22 billion. The previous financial year was 32 billion, the previous 6 months. And it's really due to the lower profit and also an increase in the arrear debt from the municipalities. We had a liquid assets of 9 billion. In September 2016, it was 30 billion. So you can see there was quite a reduction in that. So if we look at September year on year, what we do here is we compare September 2017 with September 2016. We can see there was a 2% reduction in revenue, taking into account that we only received a 2.2% price increase, so it means there was also a reduction in the volumes. The EBITDA also went down 6.8%. Cash from operating activities went down, and the primary energy cost, we show it in red, it's 2% went, the primary energy cost only went up with 2%. So there was quite a lot of focus on the primary energy cost, specifically around the availability of the generating plant performance. And you can see there at the bottom on the left-hand side, the graph around profitability. The blue bar shows you the EBITDA, and the brown shows you the net profit, and you can see how the net profit before tax is actually declining. And then also the green line shows you the EBITDA margin, that's also declining. On the right-hand side, you will see all your key financial ratios. You can see the cash interest cover, it is 1.5 times, and then the debt service cover ratio was 1. In the previous financial 6 months was 1.9. The free funds from operations as a percentage of gross debt has also declined, and also the same with your gross debt divided by EBITDA ratio of 14.1. If I can just put that gross debt in EBITDA, what it really means that you need 14 years of EBITDA to be able to pay your gross debt. So that is a concern, and rating agencies like looking at that ratio, and they also like looking at the FFO as a percentage of gross debt. The solvency, you can see that there was that improvement because of the equity injection, and then it started going in the wrong direction. And the reason, therefore, is that because there was no more equity injection into the business, and the profits that you made was very close to break even, and you had to borrow money for the new build program. That's just the income statement comparing 16 and 17. I've spoken about most of these issues already. I don't think we need to go into further detail on that. The financial position, which is basically your balance sheet, you can see there that the property, plant and equipment increased from 555 to 614 billion, and that is as you're busy building your new power stations. We can also see that the working capital went up, liquid assets went down, and then the other assets, which is mostly derivative instruments in the treasury environment, reduced slightly. The equity, you can see there was a reduction of 2% in the equity. Then the debt securities and borrowings, and that is all your borrowings. You can see there it went from 333 billion to 367 billion. And the working capital very flat, and other liabilities, which includes a lot of the provisions that we've got, increased slightly. So that is just the position on the balance sheet itself. The cash flow statement, this is a very important statement to me. If I look in September 2016, cash from operations was 32 billion. 2017, it was only 22 billion. And in then the cash required for debt servicing. Now, debt servicing is the repayment of interest and the repayment of debt. That in 2016 it was 18 billion, and in 2017 it was 23 billion. And then the cash flow used in investment activities, very much the same as the previous year. That is really the bulk program. And then we funding activities was 17 billion the previous year versus 18 billion. And therefore you had a net decrease in cash and cash equivalents of 12 billion rand. This is just an overview of the capital expenditure. And we can see there that in September 15 was about 25 billion. September 2016, the 6 months period, was 26 billion. And there was a slight drop in the 6 months to September 2017, but it was still close to, it was 24 billion rand. And we can see there, the bottom graph just shows you how we've, the inception to date. And if I can start with Kusile, in total we've spent just about 120 billion rand on Kusile. The total cost to completion is 156, Medupi 104 versus 135, and then also on the transmission side, you can see there also the projection. Okay. This is just a picture that shows you how the units came on stream. And over the period, we are projecting that we will add 10,995 megawatts to the grid. This is just the position of the real debt as at 30 September 2017. You can see the large power users, municipalities, of the total debt of 22.7 billion. 12 billion was overdue. It's now grown to about 13.5 billion. The large power users, you can see their overdue was 258, and that's predominantly businesses which were put in business rescue. And we are working with these businesses to see if we can't assist them. Small power users, you can see their 902, and then you can see Soweto debt, excluding interest. Soweto overdue of 5.4 billion, and then other customers also some overdue debt. And you can see the increase in the debtors' days from 51 days to 63 days. And then in terms of the qualified audit opinion on note 52, which deals with irregular expenditure. We have addressed it, or we are in the process of addressing it. First of all, what we've done is we've gone back to 2016 and 2017 financial years. We are reviewing all the contracts. The intention is to review 100% of all the open contracts so that we can identify any irregular expenditure in those contracts. And where possible, we will condone the irregular expenditure. And we've also already submitted some of the documentation to National Treasury for condemnation. We ensure that all the contracts are placed in terms of the law. And then there's also monitoring and compliance controls. And we've improved the reporting system itself. And then we are building a relationship with key stakeholders for future dealings and assistance. On the reporting side itself, what we've also done is we've agreed that we will use one of the SAP modules, which is called Open Text, for managing the contracts. And we've already loaded almost all the contracts exceeding a billion rand on the Open Text, on the SAP system. The benefit of that is that you will be able to draw a contract from anywhere in the country. The problem that we sometimes have is that contracts are at the power station, or when we're busy constructing, that the contracts are there, and it's very difficult from a head office to have a look at those contracts. So there's a lot of good work that they've done in that area. They've also revised the current procedure, and they've actually gave it to National Treasury. National Treasury has reviewed the current procedure, and they made some minor changes to the current procedure to improve controls. Also, there was a lot of training that happened in the commercial environment. Conclusion, the appointment of the new board has definitely assisted ESCOM and its increased investor confidence. And we secured a bridging loan of 20 billion rand. This loan must be repaid in August 2018. The governance, the ethics and accountability concerns, we're busy addressing those issues. And we found that the investors in the domestic market have actually been very supportive since then. We continue looking for efficiencies, and we will continue to do so. And when we do our budgets, we make sure that we build in a lot of the efficiencies into the budgets. We focus on liquidity position and ensuring financial sustainability. And then the 2.2% price increase has strained the cash flow situation, and the 5.23% for 2018-19 will also negatively impact on ESCOM's going concern status. The auditors are concerned around it. They have already expressed that they are concerned in issuing an emphasis of matter for the September 2017 financial statements for the 6 months, and we expect that it will be very similar at this financial year end as well, which we're busy with. Thank you.
So that's fine. Honourable members, you were listening to very, I would say, informative presentation. I would then like to open the floor for members to interrogate the presentation. Honourable Member Paulson, Honourable Member McLaughlin, and Honourable Member Snokwanyane, in that order. Okay. Honourable Member Shopestole will follow.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you. I had to keep myself awake. It was almost death by PowerPoint. Couple of questions, Chairperson. The first one is the electricity sales to key segments, which is nearing a 15-year low. And I want to know what if ESCOM has any ideas to what the causes are, if it's as a result of slowdown of business or businesses just going out of business, or if the cost of power or energy has become too expensive even for businesses, and because these could have, you know, could have far greater consequences for our economy. So one question. The other one is 38% of suppliers are black-owned companies. Now, 38% of, you know, that's the percentage of companies that are black-owned in terms of that doesn't tell us in terms of rand value what the value of those contracts are with 38%. It could be in real terms 10% of or 5%, but you know, but 30% of your suppliers are black owned. So I want to know, more importantly, in terms of the rand value of contracts to black owned companies. Okay, the other thing is, you know, it's of great concern, you know, In terms of those coal suppliers, we need to have a list of those coal suppliers, okay, and what we are paying them for coal. You know, there's that company, the Guptas, who we were paying for coal even before the coal was delivered. And, you know, so we have to make sure that we've tightened that area there. Also, in terms of evergreen contracts that Eskom has out there, you know, we need to know in terms of the value of these contracts per year, you know, because and what we're doing about phasing out those contracts, you know, because, you know, no company can keep us ransom and say you're going to do business with us and you're going to pay us, and, you know, and we could get the worst kind of service, and, you know, but I would imagine that there's a service level manager that takes care of that. So, you know, and also now with, you know, with external suppliers to the grid from renewable energy, I think it's very good upfront for us to know that we are not going down the same path which we have. I don't want to mention any names, but to make sure that we are not going down that same path where we are doing business with someone that is very close to government. So, you know, in terms of those renewable energy suppliers that will be supplying into the grid, I think it's very important that we know who the suppliers are and to make sure also that, you know, no Eskom employee may do business with Eskom. We must also make sure that no government official public representative is connected to a company that does business with Eskom in any way. I think, you know, we are taking a hard line on corruption, and we are defining corruption as even someone in government that is related to someone owning a company that does business with Eskom. Okay, so, Jefferson, I have some more questions, but what I'll do is, if I don't get a second jab at this, I will submit it in writing by the committee secretary. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I was going to ask for a 2-hour recess to prepare myself for all the questions I have, but I guess we don't have the time for that. Madam, in the opening statements made by Ms. Mokopane and Ms. Noah, they both gave us a lot of information that's not contained in the presentation we have in front of us. And while I tried to make notes, I wasn't quite keeping up with the speed they were talking at. Would it be possible for us to get copies of those opening statements so that we can just have that information to hand? Because I think there's some very important and pertinent information in what they had to say to us initially. Then I'm going to deviate a little bit and just ask, if I may, a pertinent question that popped up. Just in the supporting documentation, for example, we're told that Eskom must give us ideas, it's in the invitation, to convince us that what you're doing with the money that you get is cost effective. And then I see an item here. If I remember correctly, Eskom has about 40,000 employees in total.
rough ballpark figure, I may be off by 10,000 or so. But then in your budget lines, there's an item there where you wanted a deviation. You applied for office chairs to the value of 72 million rand. That's 72,000 office chairs at 1,000 rand each, more than your employees, almost double. And then you tried to deviate that and up to 240 million. 240,000 office chairs. What was Eskom going to do with 240,000 office chairs? This is mind-boggling. Fortunately, Treasury picked it up and rejected the deviation. But it's items like this that make this committee extremely suspicious about the things that Eskom gets up to. I personally am still waiting for an answer from Eskom as to what they did with the 60 million that they got, because we've never been told. You were given a loan of 60 billion rand, which was subsequently converted to equity. I don't know how you actually give equity in something you own yourself anyway, but that's a nice little fiction. But what happened to the 60 billion? Where did that go? Because no sooner had you got that, and in the 23 billion injection that followed it, that I saw in the press, Eskom had now secured a loan from China for another 25 billion. What goes on? Please explain this to us, because the figures you come and show us tell us you're making a profit. But you're borrowing left, right and centre all the time. It makes no sense to me. I can't get any kind of reconciliation out of the figures you give us, which again makes me suspicious. Now forgive me for saying it, but I would like to know what's going on. That's part of our duty here. We're an oversight committee, and we need to know. If I look at a thing like you show us on a slide, I'll just find it quickly now. If I compare slide 10 and slide 11, for example. Now, slide 10, improved financial performance. This is 14, 15, and 15, 16, where you show a net profit of 4.6 billion. But in the sort of next slide, which I would imagine would be a mirror image kind of slide, for the next financial period, there's no figure there for net profit. Now we've shown cash from operations. How does that relate to net profit? And why don't you show us the same thing as in both the slides? We're not shown what the cash from operations was from the previous period, but we've shown there a net profit. Here we've shown cash from operations. Revenue. What is revenue? Please tell us what your revenue actually is. Because to me, revenue is all the money that comes in. It's the money you generate. But only a small portion of this is sales. The sales of your actual core product that you produce. Where's the rest of it come from? Give us a breakdown of that. And why? Why aren't you generating your own money? What's happening here? I don't quite get it. Again, when we see the savings, you save 60 billion rand over a three-year period. What happened to that money? Is that just plowed back into production? Is that included in the figures you give us, or is it a separate entity? Do you reflect it anywhere? Even a thing like when you give us the figures, does your profit include all the money that's still owed to you by municipalities and other debtors? Is that included in there as part of your profit? Have you factored in the fact that there's a lot of it you might not collect? Do you write off a lot of the debt? We need this kind of information, and it's not here, and it's worrying that it's not here, because what you show us is all very well. But I have a huge concern when you show us what looks like quite a rosy picture in terms of finances, and yet the Auditor General is extremely worried. He can't even give you an unqualified audit. Now, that puzzles me as well. A couple of other just off-the-cuff kind of queries I have. On slide 20, income statement. Net finance cost. For September 2017, you've got 10 in brackets. September 2016, 7 in brackets. But the year-on-year change is 53%. Maybe you can just tell me what that's about. I don't see how that's 53%, because the difference is 3 out of 10 or 3 out of 7, neither one of which is 53%. So just explain to me how you're doing your calculations here, please, because I don't follow. On slide number 26, talking about the qualified audit things, I didn't see anything here about any consequences, any kind of consequence management in respect of all these items that the Auditor General picks up. Are you taking action against those who are obviously not playing the game and doing the wrong thing? And then, just to go back to the beginning, I think it was Ms. Noah who told us, and this kind of thing concerns me. To my mind, Eskom's core business is the production and the distribution of electricity and everything that goes with it. Obviously, maintenance of plants and building plants and your grid and everything else. And yet you listed, I couldn't keep up with it, a whole number of committees that you run. All sorts of committees, audit and risk, investment, gender, environment, ESCO, a people's committee, an operations committee. These all cost money. And I'd like you to give us a breakdown per committee of what it costs the taxpayer every year to run all these committees. And that must include any additional stipends that those who attend the committees receive, the cost of venue hire, the cost of travel, and please, the cost of catering for all these committees, because I think we're going to be shocked by what we hear. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honourable McLaughlin. I now call upon Honourable Member Snukwanyane.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and thank you, Eskom, for the presentation. I think I would want to start by aligning myself with what my colleague here was saying. Sometimes I think it reads my mind, because the first thing that I just observed was that we had a presentation that we had from Ms. Makubane, and unfortunately we didn't have the document. And I think the issues that you raised were issues that I thought were actually speaking to what you would like to hear. We know that you've just come out, we are just trying to get Eskom out of a negative history where there were many challenges. And I would have thought that then as we get the main presentation, we'd get something around, around operational issues, governance issues, human resource issues, issues. Remember, we are an appropriations committee. And those are the issues that we would really would want to know what is happening there, because we know that historically there have been serious challenges, and we would want to check to hear about your turnaround strategy, for instance, what it is that you have done or you are continuing to do, because I know it won't be overnight, but you should be involved in trying to address all those things and the steps and so on. And I think, like you were saying, there's just one slide which says Eskom does not recover revenue as anticipated. I mean, otherwise, if we didn't know better, looking at the rest of the presentation, would think that everything is really great at Eskom, because there's so much positivity, which is good. I mean, it's a sign that work is being done, but it would help us to actually get information on challenges, because I don't believe you don't have challenges, having inherited what you did inherit. And the issues of value for money, because our interest is money in what you are doing, and how you are trying to address all those the financial challenges, the debt, servicing and so on. That's why I think I will just really make mine more of a comment than questions, but just to say, really, that's what we would be interested in. But that is presentation that you made. It would be great if you also forwarded that document, if you have it in writing. Thank you.
Thank you. Member Shopestole.
Thank you very much, Professor. Thank you for the presentation, and I would like to reiterate that we should have a written submission of the first two inputs. When I heard that there's a new board and new everything here in Eskom, I was very excited, because I thought, as a country, and government, we have identified our challenges, and our challenges are three: poverty, inequality, and unemployment. To me, this animal
which resides in ESCOM and other parastata, with a special name called Evergreen Contracts. I think that is the hindrance for our economic growth. It actually prevents us from distributing employment to women and the youth. So for me, ESCOM will not have spoken unless if we deal with evergreen contracts. That is the thing. We can have all this, you know, this thing that you told us today with your, you can give us to go and read at home. But when you come here, tell us what you are doing about the evergreen contracts. Because we are in a democracy. We are in a developmental state. And in a democracy, it's a number game. Poverty in South Africa resides in women and the youth. And every government institution should make sure that they are spent focused on dealing with the poverty of these groups. But so far, we have not been doing that. So I am interested in one, a list chairperson of all the evergreen contracts, when they were started and when they are ending, and what this new board is going to do about them, because I don't think we need that. Unless if we're just playing games, we're not serious about economic growth of this country. We also mentioned, one of you when speaking, about municipalities that are not maybe viable. Can we have a list of all those municipalities? A list of the evergreen contracts and a list of the municipalities. The other stories, yes, we'll deal with a little bit later. But if we can sort out the evergreen contracts, we don't need those things. Because they are, you know, it's a bunch of selfish people who want all the money of the Republic, the lion's share, to themselves. And at the end of the day, they don't even invest in South Africa, those people. They don't even invest. You know, we're crying about investments, whatever. We shouldn't be when we've got these people getting the lion's shares out of our supply chain. So next time, let's have that. We'll take the talk from there.
Thank you. Honorable Shoppers Tole and Honorable Paulson have spoken about evergreen contracts. I think what, on behalf of the committee, we would like to know is whether there are any plans to review those evergreen contracts, the plans. Do you have plans to, okay. But also in terms of the contract expansions or extensions, for 2017-18. ESCOM is one of the entities that have incurred major deviations. This is according to National Treasury report that we've got. And the two major projects, namely Gusile and Midupi, are facing these major deviations and cost escalations. Could you give clarity on what are the factors led to these deviations? Factors, and how much cost escalation has been incurred by ESCOM due to such deviations? And has anyone been held accountable for this financial management? talking to consequence management. And what concrete steps is ESCOM taking to rectify this so that it does not occur in future? All right, and I know that National Treasury, I think it's in terms of Treasury regulations, the state-owned entities have to submit they have to submit their procurement plans to avoid a situation where, if you have not submitted, somewhere in between, say, 6 months down the line, then you have plans that are not linked to a budget, which leads to these deviations. So we would like to know if you have submitted your procurement plans to National Treasury. In your presentation, you have indicated that you have embarked on a revised business strategy. Now, what you have not given us is time frame. By when do you think this new or revised business strategy will be in place? Because as you can see, there's an emergency here, or there's urgency, a state of urgency, so that you know you are able to then address the state of urgency with this strategy. So revised, I take it will not just be business plan, but you said revised plan, revised turnaround strategy. Yes, I think that will be all for now. We will then request ESCOM to respond to the questions raised by the honourable members.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm just going to deal with the issues that are strategic, which at the board we're looking at, and the detail I'll request the team to assist me. Honourable Paulson, Honourable Shoppers Toilet, one of the things that the board has been faced with was also to deal with the issue of the evergreen contracts, because that has been raised to us as one of the five major issues that we need to deal with when we're appointed. And it is our considered view that we need to make sure that we diversify the ownership, and also making sure that there are more people participants in this very, very strategic sector. So definitely that is receiving priority attention from the board, and one of those issues that we are actually dealing with right now, as I've made in the presentation, is actually the procurement plans and strategies, in the sense that we are looking at least at about 90% of the contracts that are above R1 billion. So we're not just only looking at coal. We're looking at everything, including transportation of coal, including other primary energy sources like diesel. So we're looking at all those contracts at this point in time, and actually trying to assess how they've been procured. So that is definitely receiving priority attention. And then on the issues around Chairperson, the strategy, when is it going to be revised? When we were appointed in January, we found a corporate plan that was approved in September 2017, and because of the governance issues around presentation to your shareholder, the corporate plan, we had to endorse it. But we gave a caveat on that corporate plan to indicate that it assumes business as usual, and ESCOM at this point in time is business unusual. So it was agreed that by September 2018 we should be giving the shareholder not just only the capital structure of ESCOM, but also what do you believe it should be and an end state of ESCOM as you see it, because we are of the view that the end state of ESCOM needs to be thoroughly discussed and thoroughly canvassed, because we'll have to also need the support of Parliament on certain issues that might be far-reaching, which we need to be able to deal with. So we are expecting that at least by September this year we should be having that plan in place. And then, of course, from Honourable McLaughlin, I believe that the team is going to deal with those issues because they are quite detailed in nature, and we are of the view that we need to provide appropriate oversight in some of these cases that we have raised, because we're just as equally concerned, not just only about the cost containment measures, but also we are more concerned about how are we going to run the company going into the future, taking into consideration other previous cost containment measures that have not yielded the results that we just preferred.
Thank you again, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. What I will try and do is just lump the questions that are for my direct response, and then I'm also going to ask my colleagues to my left to assist in terms of the responses. Now, the first one is, why have the top customers or the industrial customer sales declined? And really, there are primarily three major reasons for that. The first one is that you'll recall in 2008 when we had massive load shedding and we were trying to manage the system, we went to the top customers and we actually asked them to reduce their consumption by 10%. So they went and invested in, you know, a whole host of solutions to reduce their consumption by 10%. And in that process, those investments were actually embedded into their systems, into their operations, and they could then not grow any higher when the situation actually got better. So it was mostly, you know, energy efficiency processes that they invested in. And then the second major reason is really that in terms of the global economic performance, I mean, we have seen that there has been a slump and the commodity prices have reduced. And also remember that some of the top customers actually compete globally with other, you know, sister or parent companies or sister companies that they belong to. And what we have found then with that is that the third reason is really not having a forward-looking or a longer medium, short-to-medium-term price signal for them to be able to get investors to come in here. So, for example, if you look at the one-year price increase, it doesn't give them certainty in terms of what is the direction of their costs. And we find that in countries, for instance, like Malaysia, we end up losing some of the competition actually goes there because they have better stability in terms of looking forward into the prices. So we do believe that the tariff increase is also a factor in terms of the what they have experienced. And those are really, I would say, three key reasons why we have seen downward sales performance within that customer category. The second one I wanted to deal with is the issue of chairs at Megawatt Park. Yes, we do have over 45,000 employees in ESCOM in total who are, you know, across the country. I think the contract, Honourable McLaughlin, you were referring to is the Megawatt Park contract. It was to upgrade the facility there. That project was subsequently stopped as part of the cost containment measures as well. So, but it basically it was for the upgrade of the facility. But I do think that one thing we have to be open about, and it's an area that we are looking at, is that in some cases as ESCOM, you know, I can say we are price takers, and yet we should actually be negotiating better. So we're engaging now with our contractors. One of the areas where we have looked at where we can implement cost containment measures is really in the getting services from different providers. And I do think that it's an opportunity that we have going into the future, and we have identified it as one of the areas where we are going to focus on when it comes to cost containment. And then the other one was really on the governance structures that I was referring to. Yes, our business, our core business really is generating electricity, transmitting it and getting it to the customer. But being a big organization, the governance structures I was referring to really is that from a board level, the board has to give oversight and make sure that the strategy is implemented, executive is doing what they are supposed to be doing. And so these committees that I was talking about is really the board subcommittees to allow the board to look at different facets of the organization so that they can provide that oversight adequately. And normally I think board meetings in a healthy organization normally are 4 times a year if the organization is healthy. And normally the fees of those board meetings are outlined in the annual financial results. And then we've got the EXCO-related subcommittees. Now, the EXCO-related subcommittees, it's internal people that attend those meetings. So it's all the executives like myself and the colleagues are to my left. Our salaries cover that, so that information also, the EXCO members' information usually is in the annual results. So that's what we, you know, it's part of our daily job that we've got to do. The travel costs will also be part of that, but again, as part of the cost containment, you know, it cuts across right through the business. So we do use technologies, for instance, you know, where we use video conferencing, we use a telephone meeting system and that kind of thing. A lot of the executives that are involved in these committees are actually at Megawatt Park. So the travel is really minimal, and normally we use our own facilities to run those meetings to be able to contain the costs. But also lower down, obviously, there will be other governance structures that are happening in various places. But as I've already said, as part of the cost containment process, we do look at those costs and say, people must not travel to go to meetings, but rather use technology and be based in their own stations. And then Honorable Shoppe Sithole asked about the municipalities that are not viable. We will provide that list, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member. We will work with National Treasury and also the AG's office to make sure that the information that finally comes here does not deviate too much. Let me ask my colleagues, maybe just starting with Martin, who's next to me, if you can pick up on your issues, particularly pertaining to the presentations. I think there were specific slides that you need to talk to. And then as I tick off, I'll come back and see what else I need to get to the colleagues.
Thank you, Ayanda. Honourable Chairman, Honourable Members, one of the questions that was raised is the issue around the 60 billion rand savings. Now, the way that we dealt with the 60 billion rand savings, because that savings come from operating costs as well as capital, as well as from the primary energy. So what we did there is we had specific targets for different packages, and what we do is we reduce the budgets accordingly, so therefore we build it into the financial systems so that people, and what we then do is we set the targets for people to manage according to their budgets. And I think the big point is that it is not just operating expenses alone, it includes also on the capital side, and it also includes the part of the primary energy expenses. The numbers that I showed there on the one graph is just the total numbers. But we have different packages of how we made up the savings.
the next question around slide 10 and 11. I think it's when we do the presentations, we tend to focus on what we believe is at that point in time important issues, and that's why we decided that we changed from net profit to cash flow from operations. But the net profit in 2016 was just over 5 billion rand, and the net profit in 2017 was about 899 million rand. Now the big question is, why did it reduce so much from the one year to the other year? There's two big issues. First of all, as the new units come on stream, you start to depreciate them over their economic life, so you start picking up the depreciation bill. And secondly, when you look at the finance cost, you will also see there's a huge increase in the finance cost, but it is because of the fact that you're not allowed to capitalize finance cost once the unit is in operation, and you'll start seeing that coming through. You will start also seeing that as we finish Medupi and Kusile, you will start seeing depreciation growing, and you will also start seeing the finance cost growing accordingly. But the question is around, what is the revenue? 99% of the revenue is the sales, is the electricity sales. That is your revenue line. Is basically the electricity sales to all your different customers. The next question was asked about the municipalities. Do we take into account the fact that the municipalities may not be able to pay for the electricity? So what we do is we apply international financial reporting standards in preparing the financial statements. And according to the financial reporting standard, is every time that you make a sale, you have got to consider whether you will be able to recover the money or not. If you are of the opinion that you do not recover the money, you will have to make a provision for the fact that you're not recovering the money. And we actually apply the international financial reporting standard accordingly. It's one of the numbers that the auditors will always come and audit to make sure that we provided sufficiently for that. And we have agreed a specific policy with the auditors to look into that, and the auditors were comfortable that the policy that we apply is appropriate and that the provision is sufficient, that we will not be able to recover the revenue.
I think from Martin, perhaps that is it.
There's just one question. The question was asked about on slide 20. If you look at the increase in the cash from 7 to 10, is it 53%? The answer is, when we prepare the slides, we will always round it off to the nearest billion. But when we do work out the exact increase or decrease, we actually work it out to the exact numbers. That is why you will actually see that if you look at 3 over 7, it's not exactly 53, but when you do the exact calculation, it comes back to 53. So it's just a question of rounding.
Okay, I think, Madam Chair, if I can go back then to the IPPs, I think the issue of conflict management was raised as a big concern. You know, to try and understand whether or confirm or disconfirm that government is doing business and Eskom is doing business with, you know, Eskom employees or state-owned company, well, we are Eskom today, are doing business with the state or government and the state-owned companies. I think that in Ms. Makubane's speech, she did touch on it, and maybe she can just elaborate specifically on just to highlight a bit more on that. No, we're not. We still have a long list. I'm taking off.
Allow them to finish, and then I'll give you the question.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I think the issues around the renewable energy IPP program. ESCOM basically in this case is just they sign in the offtake agreements. The actual procurement process is conducted by the Department of Energy. And as far as I recall from my previous job as a Director General of the Department of Energy, there are very, very specific regulations in terms of Public Administration Act, where it's very, very clear that it's illegal for government officials to do business with the state. That will include ESCOM. So it is my considered view that if there is somebody in government that is doing business with the state, that is illegal, actually. And that person, should it be found to be that they are doing business with the state, then they are likely to face prosecution. And in ESCOM in particular, we as a board, we have requested everybody that is in ESCOM that they cannot do business with ESCOM. If they want to do business with ESCOM, then they must resign and be suppliers rather than to do business with ESCOM, because that's where most of the conflict of interest resides. And Chairperson, I think we still have got quite a number of questions that we need to deal with. For example, the 38% of suppliers that are black-owned, we still need to deal with that. We still need to deal with the issues around the procurement plans. We still need to deal with the issues around the major deviations and cost escalation at Medupi and Gusile, and who has been held accountable. So I'm hoping that the team is going to continue to consider those questions.
Thank you. Thanks, Nelly. So in terms of the 38 suppliers that are black-owned, you are looking for the rand value. We'll have to provide it to yourself. We don't have a figure at this point in front of us. There was also an issue of the coal suppliers, the list of them, and how much you are paying. I think that is also something that we will provide, and we will just look at whether there is sensitive information and how do we deal with that. Off the top of my head, I'm unable to advise. And then the Tegeta issue and how it was dealt with, I will ask Willie to talk to the Tegeta issues.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members. Yes, with regards to Tegeta, I think the question was related to the issue of the coal that was delivered, and the question was, have we tightened the controls? Yes, just to give a bit of a background there, yes, the issue here, well, an incident did actually occur in August last year where the mine requested the power station to record the receipt of 37 kilotons of coal, whereas it was not delivered. And yes, the mine did record it, and the mine had said they were going to deliver the coal in September. But of course, the coal was not delivered in September, and because it had been recorded on the book, coal book, that it was delivered, then the payment process was activated. But in January, they actually did then send back a credit note to ESCOM because the coal had not been delivered. But in terms of controls, what is critically is that number one, in terms of controls, one, it was actually picked up in one of our audits, and the senior general manager in charge of audits and forensics, Mulife, might actually come in here. But it's actually one of the controls we have, that we do actually have internal audits, and the internal audit that we're actually conducting picked this thing up. And secondly, what has also happened as well is that it has now moved into a forensic audit, but however, while we are doing the detailed forensic audits, the detailed forensic investigation, the people affected have actually been suspended pending the detailed forensic investigation, and once that is concluded, if it needs be, disciplinary action is going to be taken. But in general, yes, I think it was actually showed that some of our controls are working because they are the ones who actually picked this thing up. And of course, we actually also reviewing some of our procedures as well
to ensure that it does not occur again.
Thanks. Thank you very much, Willie. I think the other question on evergreen contracts, I think Ms. Makubane has dealt with that issue adequately. Then there was a question that related to the slide, one of the slides, I think it's slide 24 on the presentation, talking about the investigation consequence management. You recall that in the speech that we are yet to give you a copy of, we did mention that there are 239 investigations that have taken place, and about 75 have been completed, and 39 of those are currently undergoing a disciplinary process. So, unless the request also, Madam Chair, is that we list them, we list those 39. I'm not sure if that was the requirement from the member, but we are in the next round we can just clarify that and know what we need to do. And then the other issue was really just on yes, I'm coming to that. It was really just to share the information, which we will do. And then there was a question from the chair on the procurement plans, whether we have submitted to National Treasury. Yes, we have. In fact, the process is that the commercial division, they compile the plan for the year. It goes through our internal governance processes. So one of the committees that I omitted to mention is that from an EXCO subcommittee point of view, we've got an EXCO tender committee, which then looks at the plans and we sign them off and we then submit to National Treasury. So yes, ma'am, that has been done. I think I owe you an answer on the extension at the deviations, in particular Midupi and Gosile, and Willie is also going to assist with that answer.
Yeah, thank you once again, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. In terms of the cost escalations for Medupi and Gusile, I can say that actually the challenge started right at the beginning, you know, in the sense that we did not do adequate front-end engineering. I think what actually happened was the decisions to make investments, I think, were delayed, and by the time the decisions were made, we're actually running out of capacity. So we did not do adequate front-end engineering. So I'll give you an example. You will assume that the soil in the area is of a certain type. And when you actually arrive now to start doing the earthwork so that you can do the construction, you find that the soil is actually not the sort of type that you expected. So you need to address that. It might mean digging out the existing soil and bringing in soil from other areas. So what actually that does is it means that instead of construction now, we are actually changing your designs. You know, we are actually redesigning in the middle of the project, which obviously results in time extensions and also extra cost as well. So that was the one element. We also had challenges initially, especially with the Medupi 6, the first unit that was commissioned at Medupi. It was actually quality issues with the boiler construction. These were issues to do with the contractors, the OEMs. These issues were actually picked up by our engineers who challenged the OEM, and then some of that work had to be redone so that it actually meets the stringent quality criteria that ESCOM requires. But now that's actually been sorted out now. Then another element which actually caused a lot of delays and which delays then result in extra costs was labor unrest. I think initially because we've got so many contractors on site and each contractor has got its own labor relations procedures, it actually caused a conflict until actually ESCOM stepped in to say, let ESCOM work together with all the contractors on site and together with all the unions on site so that we've got an overall labor agreement that are binding to everybody. So those actually have now been sorted out. I think the labor unrest is now very much under control. So those were really the main three areas that actually caused the delays, which in turn caused the cost to go up. Thank you.
Chair, maybe what I can also add to this is that, you know, from the conception of a power station to the actual building and putting it into commercial operation, it's a process really that takes about 7 to 10 years. You know, if you do it thoroughly and you want to do a good job, it takes that long. Now, you'll recall that Eskom was actually given the permission to build, you know, it was a very, very short window that we were given. It was less than 3 years. And in that time, we were also on the eve of load shedding. So when we started, when we hit the ground, we actually, in terms of starting to do the designs, to do the construction and so on, we actually found that, as Willie has already said, because we didn't have sufficient time up front to do the pre-planning and the correct designs based on the information that we would have got on the sites, it actually exacerbated this this challenge of ours of building. And consequently, what we have done internally as an organization is really just to put together a lessons learned book that actually outlines what were the circumstances and conditions and assumptions at the time that we were given this opportunity to build the three stations. So perhaps in replacing the consequence management, part of the consequence really has been for us to look at what are the lessons that we can draw out of this. And I think it's critical that you have got to have adequate time to be able to do upfront planning. The revised business strategy, the time frames we are looking at is September this year, honorable members. So we also indicated that hopefully in July when we announce the results, we should be able to just highlight some of the key points and key focus areas of the strategy. We hope that by that time we will be able to share that information, but the timeline that we are looking at is July 2018. Honourable Chair, I think those are the questions that I have ticked off in my list, and I think that we have covered most. Martin is indicating one or two that he's missed.
Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, I quickly had to look up the number. The question was raised of the spent with the black economic people, the companies owned by black people. How much was spent not in a percentage term? The shareholder compact is based on percentage terms, but what I did is I quickly looked and see there's a specific formula how to calculate it. And in total, we've just spent under 68 billion rand in terms of the formula. So if you then take the percentage of about 38% and multiply it with it, you get to a number of just over 26 billion rand. Specifically, that's being spent on black owned companies.
Okay. Honourable members, do you have follow up questions? Honourable member Shopestole, Honourable member Folsom, Honourable member Snukwanyane.
Thank you, Chair. You know, regarding the Evergreen contract, I heard that there was something that Eskom used to give people money and then do the digging for them, and then later they charge Eskom. I don't understand how that works. Was there anything like that in Eskom, and does it still continue? And how many of these companies actually bought that type of thing?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your responses thus far. Although I must say, the question about the Evergreen contracts weren't responded to, Chairperson, because what we were told here that this is one of five major issues receiving priority. We're looking at the procurement plans, we're looking at contracts above $1 billion. But what I'd like to know is, what is going to be the guiding principle as far as evergreen contracts are concerned? You know, saying that you're going to look at something says nothing. Tell me what the guiding principle is going to be, that based on these factors, we will continue with this particular contract. Based on these factors, we will cancel contracts. That's the one question. The other one, Chairperson, is in terms of open cycle gas turbines and the amount of money that Eskom spends on it, on diesel for these open cycle gas turbines in January, it was 4.67 million rand. In February, it was, in February it was 43.62 million rand. And in March it was 140.67 million rand. Now I'd like to know, Chairperson, first question is, in terms of the drastic increase in cost by almost 1,000% from January to February, and from February to March, the amount more than trebles again. So what is this increase based on? Is it based on the increased cost in diesel? Is it based on the increased amount of diesel used? And what are the reasons then for an increased amount in diesel? And also, shouldn't we be looking at renewable energy for instead of these open cycle gas turbines that are driven by diesel, like solar energy, wind? Eskom is nice and close to the sea. Hydroelectricity, Chairperson. Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Just something which I forgot to speak to. In terms of government departments that all ESCOM, how huge is this problem of ESCOM being owed lots of money, especially by the municipalities? And the other thing is, you know, something that we may not realize is that, you know, there are so many people that are stealing electricity. They call it bridging electricity. Any systems in place to try and counter this? Sometimes I even feel that, because sometimes not feel actually, I hear that some of your employees help the people to actually bypass the meters there, and this is how you lose a lot of revenue, because people get it for nothing or for next to nothing. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize. I don't know whether I wasn't listening or wasn't in the room at the time, but I didn't hear any response to my question about consequence management in terms of the audit reports and the findings. If there was an answer, I apologize. If there wasn't, could I get one? And then, Madam, if I could just ask, on slide, doesn't seem to have a number, but it's got a figure 3, new build schedule uncertainty, and it talks about Madupi and Kosili and where they are. I'm asking if we could not be perhaps presented with Gantt charts in respect of these two projects, giving us specifics on where we're at, where we're going to, what the timelines are, what the expense ratios are, and so that we can get a better picture of where are we actually with these things, because we all know they're way over budget, and we all know there's reasons for it, some good, some bad, but can we get a much clearer picture on it? On it in the form of something like a Gantt chart or something that would equate to that. Thank you, ma'am.
It's a deviation. We would like you to, what informed this movement? It's a
It's very high, from 72 million to 240 million. And then where you spoke about projects that would take off the ground, and somewhere in the middle, due to maybe a soil that is not suitable for that project, you would then go back and redesign in the middle of the project implementation. Can you explain to us how does this happen? Because as far as I can recall, before you start any project, there must be a feasibility study to avoid such wastage. Because whether we want or not, this one, obviously, its impact is cost escalations of that project against the limited resources that we government has. Actually, you can even talk about a fruitless expenditure in the process, because if you spend money and then you have to go back and start with a new design, wasteful expenditure. So if you could explain on how has it happened? Does it mean that you do projects without going through the first stage of project management, which is feasibility study? All right, and then I have requested for a report on what led to the deviations and cost escalations at Kusile and Mudupi. I tried to listen, but may we request a comprehensive report to be submitted to the committee for our consideration. And then you, in your presentation, you state that Eskom had engaged both DPE and National Treasury for evidence compliance to conditions attached to the equity injection. Now, this is ambiguous. It's not clear. Please confirm that all conditions pertaining to the recapitalization have been met. Are there any that have not been met? And maybe why? You look at your slide 26. In slide 26, we would like you to provide timelines and elaborate on specific details and concrete action steps underpinning the following. Né? Addressing and condoning. It's with regard to Eskom procurement environment, where you said you'll be addressing and condoning, where possible, all instances that were identified in note 52. Here we would like you to give us action steps and also the timelines, because if it ends up here, we might find ourselves in future also getting this narrative. So we would like a movement that will take you to actual implementation and bring about the change that we all would like to see. Now, ensuring legislative compliance of all contracts placed, here we also need your, if you could be specific about time frame and the action steps. Yeah? Establishing monitoring and compliance controls and reporting systems, save here. Time frames and the action steps, building relationships with key stakeholders for future dealings and assistance. We will then hand over to you. My observation when you respond, you go deeper into narrative. We would like to get specific responses. Ne? Yeah, not the more so of the narrative going, taking a roundabout way to tell. Just be specific in your responses so that you can then take this to another level. Thank you very much.
Thanks again, Chairperson. I will leave the detailed stuff to the team, but let me deal with Honorable Paulson's issues around contracts, what we are doing as a board. obviously, as a board, we don't know the contents of those contracts. We don't know the nature of those contracts. So hence, therefore, that's why we need to go deep into those contracts and find out what are the conditions and also what are the legalities that are associated with those contracts. Then we can be able to establish the guiding principles. Because at this point in time, we know, we've been told that they are evergreen contracts, but we do not really know what are the contents thereof, and if they are evergreen, it was for how long, etc., etc. So I can assure you that as soon as we are able to establish the nature of those contracts, then we'll be able to provide guiding principles of what really needs to be done. On the issue of renewable energy, Honorable Paulson, renewable energy is there as it's available. Yesterday, Cape Town experienced a tremendous amount of rain. So obviously, it was overcast. Obviously, renewable energy was not available, because especially from the sun. Now, if we have a situation like that, you need something to support the renewable energy production. So hence, therefore, OCGTs have been developed to do exactly that, to support when there is an urgent need. But on the months that you have actually indicated, the issue there was the coal availability. And in that, we've indicated that the major issue there was the lack of coal from some of the Tegeta mines, Optimum coal mines, due to them being in business rescue. That contributed quite a lot. Hence, therefore, that's why we had to utilize OCGTs. OCGTs are simply for short term. We cannot afford to use them for a long term. So effectively, that's when we actually need them. We need them when we've got to deal with an emergency. I'll just give the team then to go ahead.
Okay. Thank you very much. Willie is going to deal with the cost plus mines. He's going to, I think the OCGTs, maybe he can talk to the detail of why the cost increased. Okay, the renewables is dealt with. And that's all for Willie. Enough.
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. To address the issue of the coal contracts, maybe let us break it into 3 points. And one is the duration of the contracts. Two, it is the issue of the cost of capital for the mines. And three, it is the ownership. I think we need to understand these three dimensions. I think an Eskom power station, coal station, typically lasts about 50 years. And so when you now need to get coal for the mine, for the power station, even the mines will tell you that, you know, to sink a shaft probably is a project of about 15 years or so, if you've got to sink a shaft. So even the mines as well, the coal suppliers, all of them actually prefer, you know, longer-term contracts, because it gives certainty to them. You know, to go to them and say, sink a shaft or develop a section of an existing shaft, let's say for 1 year or 2 years or 5 years, it becomes problematic. So Eskom actually does prefer to have a longer-term relationship with the mines, and so that there is certainty on both sides, for the mine as well as for Eskom. Because obviously mining itself is a long-term business. The Eskom power station is also a long-term business as well. Now, historically, what came out, and I'm not saying it's necessarily true today, but way back, it was determined at that time that in some cases it was actually cheaper for Eskom to raise the capital required to fund the starting up of the mine as well as the refurbishment of the equipment of the mine that might be required. So those mines, we call them the cost-plus mines. So actually, Eskom provides the capital to sink a shaft, the capital required to refurbish it, to sustain the mine. And the basis of that was it was actually cheaper for Eskom to do that. So meaning that if the mine was going to do it itself, it becomes more expensive. And obviously there are some mines where actually it's not cost plus mines, but it's fixed cost mines. But historically, it has been cheaper for Eskom to provide the capital upfront and then the capital to sustain. And then obviously the third dimension now is actually an ownership issue. I think the ownership it is actually one of the issues that Eskom is looking at. Because the ownership, I think, in terms of transformation, you know, the transformation in terms of black economic empowerment is very, very critical. Look, some progress has actually been made. I think you are aware, for instance, that Anglo-American has now pulled out of the coal mining, you know, that was actually supplying Eskom. It has actually now been taken over by Seriti, which is a black-owned company. I think they are about probably 53 days or 54 days now. So they've taken over. And it's very good that actually last week we actually had a meeting with them. Their executive was at Megawatt Park, our head office, and of course the delegation of Eskom was actually headed by the chief executive. And we are very, very confident, obviously, that Seriti, having taken over these mines from Anglo-American, they are actually going to continue giving us the service that we actually require. I believe that they are actually going to meet Eskom's requirements and Eskom standards. So I think, so going forward, obviously, it is these issues of ownership now to see how we can actually start influencing it. And we also met, even Exaro was there as well. We also met South 32. So yes, I think the issues of ownership actually do need to be addressed. So in short, I think yes, it's preferable to have long-term contracts because it gives certainty, but the issues of ownership, they actually definitely need to be addressed in the light of the transformation that we require in the country. And then coming back to the issue of open cycle gas turbines, yes, it is true that maybe in the month of January and February, we did use them a bit more compared to the previous months. But I can assure the committee, I was actually just looking at the figures I have, which I have up to the 27th of March, and which was just about 3 days before the end of the financial year. The budget for the full year, ending 30 March, is 674 million. And as of the 27th of March, we had used 307 million. So, and I'm pretty sure, therefore, that if we give you the final figures now for the end of March, because the 27th of March was 307 million, it will way be below the budget of 674 million. And in terms of saying now why renewables versus open cycle gas turbines, we must remember that, you know, the renewables, you know, it's there, yes, and the coal and the nuclear and the hydro, they're there to do your normal supply. But sometimes you might find that for various reasons, you know, you might find that some of the plant is out for maintenance, or maybe some of the plant has got a breakdown. Now, sometimes if that is the case, you are not going to be able to meet your peak. You know, peak typically at 6 p.m. or 7 p.m., depending on whether it's summer or winter. And then in that case, then you are able then to start the OCGTs so that you can meet the peak. You run your open cycle gas turbines so that you can meet the peak, and then you actually switch it off afterwards. Thank you.
Okay, then let me deal with the issue of government departments that owe Eskom. Actually, this problem of owing Eskom is not so big within our area of supply. The municipalities are the ones that are really finding that they have difficulties in getting money from government departments. I don't have the figures off the top of my head, but there are big numbers that have been quoted that are owed to the municipalities by the government departments, but that problem is not so big from an Eskom point of view. And then on the illegal connections and bridging of meters, yes, we do have that challenge. And how we deal with it really is that in terms of illegal connections, where we see illegal connections, we do go in and remove them.
Secondly, we also work with the municipality to see if we can extend the electrification so that people can actually get supply that they can pay for legally. And the bridging of meters, I have to admit that, yes, some Eskom employees actually do help communities for a fee to bridge meters or to bypass, and where we do catch them, we act and we discipline them. But it is a problem that we certainly have in the company. The question of the new build costs in a Gantt chart format, we will do that. We will supply that information. On the deviation of the from 72 million to 240 million for chairs, which was raised by the, I think we will have to get the details. We don't have the information. I was just conferring with the colleagues. We don't have the exact details, and I think that we will have to give a written submission to respond to that question. And then there was also, again, Midupi and Busile, why we didn't do feasibility studies beforehand. We will submit a comprehensive report, but what I was trying to demonstrate with the cycle, the 7 to 10 year cycle of building power stations, I was trying to illustrate that we actually didn't have the time to do that because we had to hit the ground running. And in the process, when we found that some of the information, like the geotechnical studies that should have been done in Midupi in particular, were not done in time for us to be able to understand that importing of soil is going to be a big requirement, and that we will have to give that to add the costs that are related to the soil conditions that we found at the site when it happened. So we will bring, we will do a comprehensive report then, Madam Chair, which then outlines the reasons as to why we ended up with a huge deviation. The cost to completion has been shared, I think, on slide, towards the latter part of the slide, we have shared the cost to completion. So we do have a sense of how much it's going to cost at the end of the two power stations that are still outstanding. I'm going to ask Martin to talk to the equity injection conditions, whether they've been met, how many, and how many still have to be met.
Thank you, Honourable Chairman, Honourable Members. In terms of the equity conditions, we had regular meetings with National Treasury and DPE to review the conditions, and we've actually on a quarterly basis submit our shareholder report to DPE and National Treasury. In there, we gave feedback on whether we met, how far are we meeting these conditions. On the 6th of November 2017, there was a letter that confirmed that all the conditions has been met. Okay, so at this point in time, it has all been committed, and I think, Donald, you may be able to confirm.
Thanks, Martin. Thanks, Chair, thanks, Honorable Members. From the engagement that we had together with National Treasury, with ESCOM, is all the conditions were met. So right now, the two departments, we're looking at preparing a submission that would be sent to Cabinet to update them in terms of how that process unfolded.
Thank you. And Chair, just the last one on the consequence management for the notes 52 irregular expenses. What we will do is give you, as that already indicated, the 239.75 have been dealt with, 39 currently under disciplinary process. So what we will do is we will outline the details as the committee has requested.
I know I went out, but I'm told you haven't responded on the expansion request for office chairs from 72 million to 240 million. Have you responded to that?
Yes, we have. My response was we will submit a report because we don't have the details here with us today. Yes.
Honourable Members, when I look at it, it doesn't look like we have answered all the questions we want to ask. Honourable Members, should we call it? Any others? Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
was talking about Eskom having considered it cheaper to sink the shaft in the past. I just want to ask you that in your revision of your plans, don't you think it is the right time to consider sinking shafts for the historically advantage, because it's a fact that they will not have the requisite capital. So it's a plan that you applied successfully in the past for people who even had money to do it. So why don't you put it in a plan that you are going to make sure you give tenders to women, sink shafts for them, so that we address this poverty of the South African, the major group of South African women. Because let's be serious, unless as a country we deal with women poverty, we will do nothing about this poverty. It's going to remain. And as you know, poverty in women affects children. The two groups together, they form the bigger part of the population. And democracy is about numbers. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, those were very, very important questions. But I think I'll be remiss in my duty if I do not respond to Honourable Shoppers Tolle around the issue of ownership. I think Willie has just started to look at indicating reporting. I think probably what we might have to do, Chairperson,
is to come to the committee and simply just share with you the progress that has been done on I wouldn't just call it black economic empowerment, but I would say diversification of ownership within the areas where we procure. So I think that is going to be quite important. So the team will have to come again and then just share that with you, because there is some work that has been done, and they still also plan to continue to do same. Now, Chairperson, I'm glad that you did ask us about the issues of audit and risk and compliance. At the moment, Eskom is governed by both the Eskom Conversion Act and also by the Companies Act. And in terms of the Companies Act, the audit, risk and compliance is a statutory board subcommittee. So basically, between that and also the ethics committee, those are two statutory committees which, it doesn't matter what the board does, you have to have those in order to comply with the Companies Act. At the moment, we do have the Audit and Risk Committee that is chaired by Ms. Sindisiwe Mabaso Goyan, and who has been in that environment for quite a long time. She has been in the private sector, but also she's a former CFO of Transnet, so she has got a requisite skill of understanding both the private and the public sector. So at least that one, at this point in time, we do have it. Now, in terms of the second question around the ethical guidelines, definitely, I'm sure most of them members, they are aware that one of the executives was deemed to have a conflict of interest because of sitting on a board of a company that is going to be doing business with Eskom. And we went through the policies, and we found that indeed, in terms of their policy, that was actually allowed, which we felt as a board was totally, totally incorrect. So hence, therefore, we have instructed the team, especially on the oversight of the ethics committee, to relook at these conflict of interest policies and also ethics policies to make sure that they're in line with the best practice, because we felt that what we had was not the best practice. Because what actually happens, that the reason why some of the people in Eskom were doing business with Eskom is because it's allowed. It was in the policy. So, and we are of the view that had to change. And then of course, the support measures that we are going to need from the committee. I would like the committee to make sure that they exercise oversight. Bring us here. Make us accountable. Let make sure that we answer for some of the lapses that might not have been foreseen. So for us, what is going to be important is to be able to continuously be able to come and provide input from you. If there are things that are uncomfortable that the committee has actually established, please, we would like them to be raised so that we can make sure that we correct them. Thank you so much.
Okay. Honorable Chief Whip, I would like you to just make a comment so that before we close. Any comment or from you? Maybe let me say any comment.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. I think the comment I want to make is that Eskom has been in the bad news for quite some time, and that worries the committee, because part of your funding is appropriated through here, through this committee. And it is for that reason that we take interest in this entity being turned around and becoming a vehicle for energy security for the country, for our people, and for the economy. We get worried when time and again we hear that you are asking for, Eskom is asking for bailouts, and often those bailouts have to be processed through this committee, and we wonder why it is that Eskom is not becoming a profitable state-owned company. We also worry that at a time when our focus is radical economic transformation, if Eskom continues the way it has been, it might not contribute to that bigger effort. It might not be able to contribute to that bigger effort, especially the bigger effort of ensuring that black businesses get into the into the playing space of Eskom, into the business space of Eskom. One of the things that, Chairperson, I would have liked us to get, in addition to the information that you have, that members are saying needs to come forth, especially linked to the green contract, is a list of those contracts and the ownership of those contracts. And linked to that, I wanted to also check whether what's the cost of coal per ton. And the reason I ask that question is there have been instances where South African minerals were sold to South African companies and to government at import parity prices. One example has been steel. And I'm sure some of us would be aware of the of very intense negotiations that took place between DTI and ArcelorMittal on that matter. Some settlement has been reached, and I was wondering whether Eskom has a similar situation as well, and that's part of the problem. Because it's unthinkable that anybody could sell South African commodities to South African companies at import parity prices, and thereby kill South African industries, or make it difficult for downstream and upstream industries to flourish. So those are some of the things, Jefferson, that I thought, if they were not raised, I would have liked to add to the question that might come back to the committee, not to be answered now. Thank you, Chairperson.
Well, thank you so much for your full and comprehensive presentation.
but also I must thank the honourable members for their meaningful and constructive engagement with the presentation. While we appreciate the presentation and detailed inputs, it's important that the information is simplified as far as possible, as these are public meetings and citizens should be able to follow on exactly how their entity ESCOM is performing. I'm sure you have noted the concerns of the honourable members and kindly ensure that their concerns are fully taken on board and permeate the entire ESCOM operations. Just some few points that I would like to highlight. The Constitution of the Republic of South Africa provides that procurement by all state organs must be fair, equitable, transparent, competitive, and cost-effective. So this means no to evergreen contracts, which are anti-transformation and anti-skills development, no to deviations, which also are anti-transformation, anti-competitive, and they hurt small businesses. We are very happy that you also submit that you are dealing with mismanagement and irregularities, including the investigations underway. We welcome lifestyle audits, and no state employee should be doing business with ESCOM. You can show zero tolerance there. You just make one example, the rest will follow the rules. The committee wants all these efforts accelerated and will support you. Good governance is non-negotiable. The committee wants a clean audit report. I mean, you are brand new. Just give yourself a legacy at an entry point. It's a question of the willpower to do it. The country wants a clean, transparent, efficient, and effective ESCOM. I repeat, clean, transparent, efficient, and effective ESCOM. We have agreed on documents that have to be submitted. Please do submit all those reports as requested. Maybe we should give you time frame. Maybe, say, in 7 days' time. Because you have those. It's not like you're going to start afresh. So within 7 days, we will continue monitoring ESCOM very closely. I told you our interest is after appropriation of money through transfers in your case, we follow that money to look at is it really servicing the South African citizenry and is it making an, are we making an impact in their lives? Because the Constitution says we've got to build a quality life for all. Quality life for all. So, okay, we will support the new board and executive team in turning around ESCOM and positioning ESCOM to contribute to both economic growth, inclusive economic growth, and overcoming poverty and inequalities. Thank you very much to the board and to the executive, and thank you, honorable members. Okay. The meeting, honorable members, stands adjourned.
I'm well, thanks. How are you? Very cold outside. But good, we've got the rain. I'm glad it's raining. Ah, but this is Cape Town. This is Cape Town. The rain comes. For some of us, we don't want to go out to the water. For some of us, we're content. Thank you.
I'm not talking about the number.